Members, the ayes are 77, the noes are 44.
And that's the moment when New Zealand Parliament passed marriage equality. Kia ora, welcome to Emirates Podcast, episode 298. Today is Wednesday, April 24, 2013. It was a very big deal, as you might imagine. It was a very big deal. And naturally, I was very pleased to have witnessed the entire thing. Actually, I think it's one of the few bills I've ever watched all three readings in Parliament. And we were riveted to the screen for the final reading. Nigel's brother was staying with us at the time, and his sister and our niece came by to watch it with us. So we were all watching it in the room, and I have to admit that my eyes got a little watery at the end, particularly when they sang the Waiata. And that particular audio is an excerpt from the larger bit. And at the end of this podcast, I'm going to play the entire thing, so if you haven't heard it and want to, you can. I'm also going to post a link to a video that I posted on my blog about from the very end as well, so if you want to see it for yourself. But it was a very, I was going to say it was a very emotional time, but it probably in some ways wasn't, because we certainly expected the result that we got. And the speeches in the third reading were almost all in favor of it. There were only really three. There were three that were against it. One of them was pretty vicious from this sort of troglodyte politician by the name of Winston Peters, who is very often racist against Asians, because he's Maori himself, very, very often racist, sexist, and homophobic. So his opposition wasn't particularly unexpected. But as even his conservative allies noted, he wasn't opposing it because he was opposing marriage equality. He was opposing it because he thought it should go to a referendum. And so they don't really think of him as an ally as such, just on that one point maybe. And the other two people who spoke against it were National Party MPs. But by and large, the end of it was pretty quiet. There wasn't a whole lot of carrying on. There certainly wasn't the kind of vitriol that you might see in other debates. It was kind of calm. And I think part of that was because we knew what the outcome was going to be. Nobody had any doubt. And so it was a matter of just kind of getting through it. Once again, my favorite speech is from a conservative member of the National Party, another old white guy, just as it was for the first and second readings. And but I should say that the guy, Maurice Williamson is his name, is generally speaking not one of my favorite MPs. I often disagree with him. I often don't like what he does as a minister and so on. And so I tend to think that he's, we'll let him have his moment, because that's all his opponents are going to give him. But I am certainly willing to give him that much anyway. I often say, as a matter of fact, that when somebody's right, it should be celebrated regardless of which side of the aisle they're sitting on. Be that as it may, the speeches were all pretty good, except for the antis, naturally, the people who were opposed to it. And but even, like I said, even they weren't horrible except for Winston. So, you know, swings and roundabouts. Now, all of the speeches are available on Parliament's YouTube channel, which is, I think, called In the House NZ or something like that. At any rate, I'll put a link to it in the show notes. They're not categorized or tagged, as near as I can tell, so you're going to have to look, although I'll double-check that, and if so, I'll put the correct note, the correct link in the show notes. But I believe you have to look up for the bill name and the date, which was April 17, in order to find them. There's 20 parts altogether, and most of them are really quite short, so it's not like you have to spend hours watching it. We had to spend hours, but no, actually it wasn't that bad. It was a couple of hours all up on television, including some slight delays and things in the voting itself. So that was it, and marriage equality was passed. And then within a couple of days, the Governor General had provided royal assent, which is sort of like signing it into law. And that's done. It's a done deal. It is now law in New Zealand, and it takes effect in August. One of the amendments at the initial stages was to extend the date of it taking effect by 4 months to give the Department of Internal Affairs, which takes care of marriages, among other things, time to get ready, basically. And so that's what's happening now. And by August, the new forms will be available, which will apparently give people a choice between bride and bridegroom or partner and partner. The radical right was frothing at the mouth about that because they said that the words husband and wife were going to be outlawed. And, of course, that was nonsense. And, I mean, what? Like, the government cares what people call each other, for instance? But then the Department of Internal Affairs apparently had a draft, a discussion document or something about changing the wording to something a bit more sensible. And the frothing right got all worked up again about it. And then they said, well, actually, we're not going to be changing that. We're just going to be adding an appropriate word so that they can people can choose what works for them. And I thought, now that sounds like compromise. God forbid. The thing is that there was no way that the radical right was ever going to be happy with anything about this bill. They were unalterably opposed to it. There was no compromise that was possible or that would make them feel any better about it. They said that churches would be forced to conduct same-gender weddings, which was nonsense because they're specifically exempted from having to do so by other legislation, including the Marriage Act itself. And they said that ministers would be forced to marry same-gender couples. Now, the thing that they make the same claim in America, too, from time to time, and the thing that's always annoyed me about that is they seem to have such an they seem to want to imply that LGBT people are so awful, so evil, that they're going to look around for a church just to get them, just to make them suffer. And that's bullshit. A marriage is, for anybody, is supposed to be the happiest day of their lives. They're not going to ruin it by forcing somebody who doesn't want to do it, or to go to a place where they're not welcome. I mean, that's offensive that they would say that. But in the end, they got a religious exemption, but not the one that I feared. I feared that they were going to put through a religious exemption to just make it so they didn't have to marry same-gender couples. But it reiterates that they're not required to perform weddings for anybody that they don't want to. And that's for any minister of religion or any marriage or civil union celebrant, for that matter, who is affiliated with an organized religion, recognized religion. And then that became a bone of contention with the radical right because they said, what about matters of conscience for independent celebrants or registrars? They should be permitted to refuse? Well, no, they shouldn't, actually, because they are employees of the state. They are performing a state function on behalf of the state, not on behalf of any church or religion, and certainly not on behalf of themselves. They don't have the right to pick and choose who they're going to perform a marriage ceremony for if it's a legal ceremony. Now, in the case of celebrants, again, no same-gender couple is going to choose a celebrant who doesn't want to do it. That's just not going to happen. A registrar is another issue because it's like going to, what do you call it in America? I've forgotten, the marriage office where you go and get your license and all that stuff. We call it the registry office. And that's a government office. There is absolutely, positively no way that a government employee carrying out a government function on government premises has the right to not perform their duty under the law. And I'm sorry that the religious right is upset about that. And prudent people on the religious right find ways around that. They can talk to each other and say, look, I'm really not comfortable with performing weddings between a Catholic and a Jew, for instance. Could you please do that if any come forward? They can work these things out with themselves to make sure that the service isn't denied and there are no issues. But sometimes there have been cases with clerks in some jurisdictions refusing to perform ceremonies and refusing to do anything to make it possible for these ceremonies to happen. That is a whole other issue. And New Zealand law doesn't permit people acting on behalf of the state, performing a state function, to do that. Freedom of conscience does not extend to breaking the law. And this is just something they're either going to have to get used to or they're going to have to, stop performing ceremonies, one or the other. And that's as it should be, in my opinion. So that was that. That was all over. Done and dusted. And then 3 days later, the leading opponent of the marriage equality bill started tweeting out links saying things like, proof that polygamy is next, one, and then two, and then three. And then all of them were overseas pieces except one. They're all opinion pieces or overseas or whatever. They're not from any movement or anything. And I'm thinking, right, these people apparently think that there should be some sort of recognition of polygamy. In a free society, are they not entitled to say so? What is this sudden conspiracy saying that polygamy is next when these people have the freedom to say what they want to, just as our opponents on the radical right have the freedom to say that polygamy is wrong and blah, 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 blah. So these other people have the right to say that they think that it should be recognized. That doesn't mean it's going to happen. That doesn't mean that there's any groundswell. That doesn't mean there's any movement, because there isn't. As a matter of fact, all of the countries in the world that have legal marriage equality for same-gender couples, all of them outlaw polygamy. The only countries in the world that permit polygamy also are very anti-gay. Sometimes, in some of those countries, homosexuality is punishable by death. So there's this huge improbability that they're trying to make seem suddenly probable, and it just isn't. It's just silly. And but, I mean, people ought to be able to talk about these things if they want to without the radical right jumping on them saying, see, we told you that this was next. Well, no, it's not next. People are just expressing their freedom of thought and freedom of expression. And if you don't like it, too bad. This is a democracy. Shut up. Or at least let them have their say, because God knows these people on the right have been having their say. So that's actually still the main thing that the main radical right guy has been talking about, and to talk about polygamy. They're obsessed with it. The other guy, who heads this one-man party called the Conservative Party, sent out a press release saying that the day of reckoning was to come, which made it sound kind of like a threat, actually. And in a sense, they are threatening. The Conservative Party pledges that they will have binding referenda all the time on issues, big and small, apparently. Now, a postal referendum, because they're almost always done by postal ballot, costs a couple of $1 million and up. So how are they going to be paying for these tens or maybe hundreds of millions of dollars worth of referenda during the course of a parliamentary term? He doesn't say, but he says they have to be done. Mind you, he's also said that he wants to abolish the Māori seats and end the settlement process under treaty negotiations. So he's not exactly the most socially aware person, but he's just gotten himself into a bit of a bother. And I blogged about this. I'll put a link in the show notes. There is a satirical site in New Zealand, launched about a month or so ago, called The Civilian. Now, I'd never heard of it, and I would bet you that the vast majority of New Zealanders had never heard of it either, until yesterday, because the day before, they published a satirical piece about the marriage equality thing, because in his speech in Parliament, Morris Williamson talked about how had these preachers telling him that the drought in New Zealand was God's judgment on the country for advancing marriage equality. And then on the day of the third reading, it was pouring in his electorate. And so they're making fun of him about that, because shortly after that, it was flooding in parts of the country. And so it was satirical, and it attributed a quote to this guy. His name's Colin Craig. Well, he didn't think it was funny, and he went to his lawyers. He went crying to his lawyers, who told the guy who published the site that he had to take it down, apologize, and pay $500 to Colin Craig toward his legal fees. Well, he didn't take it down. What he did instead is he put the apology at the beginning, added a couple little somewhat sarcastic flourishes, and then emboldened this section of stuff, he said, the editor said, so that everyone would know what he didn't say. And, of course, then Twitter lit up with people making fun of this guy, Colin Craig, and making all kinds of Colin Craig rules and stuff like that. And then this morning, the New Zealand Herald reported on the story, and they printed the paragraph in question as well. So this is called the Streisand effect, when you try to censor something and you end up inadvertently making it much bigger in the real world than it ever would have been otherwise. I would bet that maybe only a few dozen people at most would have seen the thing had it not been for all of this silliness of calling in the lawyers. Because now anybody in New Zealand who could probably did see the quote. And it just makes Colin Craig look a bit silly. And his actions make him look silly, not the satirical piece. The satirical piece is, But then now today he said that he's withdrawing his complaint, and that but he's going to sue one of the TV networks by the end of the week. So I expect there'll be more levity to be had on Twitter at his expense later this week. But I don't know. We'll see. Or maybe it's next week. I'm not sure what he meant. But we'll see. The entertainment never stops. I tell you, it never stops. Now, of course, all of this raises a lot of questions. First of all, in the neighborhood, what's going on with Australia? And the short answer is nothing. Prime Minister Julia Gillard of the Australian Labor Party has reiterated her opposition to marriage equality. although apparently I'm hearing there may be some equivocation on that kind of behind the scenes. Meanwhile, the leader of the Liberal National Coalition, Tony Abbott, who's the leader of the opposition and widely expected to become prime minister after the Australian elections in September, he is a quite a rabid Roman Catholic, and he decided that his entire caucus would vote as a bloc against marriage equality because he personally was opposed to it. Now he's saying that it will be basically a matter for caucus to decide how they vote, if it's going to be a conscience vote, as these sorts of things often are, or if they're going to vote as a bloc. So that maybe you could see that as a bit of a softening in his attitude, or maybe he's just realizing that the tide has turned and he better make some moves to seem to be embracing the new reality rather than trying to stick his head in the sand and pretend that the past is still the present. But Australia is a very different country from New Zealand. They have a lot more trouble with fundamentalist religion in Australia. They have a lot more people of certain ethnic derivations, particularly Italians and Greeks, who are very often very religious, and in the case of Greeks in particular, often very homophobic. So they have more of a hill to climb than we did in New Zealand. But I have no doubt that they're going to get there eventually. It's just a question of how long it's going to be. But I don't think it's going to be any time in the next few years, to be honest. I would say more 5 to 10. But, you know, these things pick up pace. If you had asked me 5 years ago, would New Zealand have marriage equality in 2013, I probably would have said no. So, you know, you can never tell. You can never, actually, if you'd asked me last year, if we'd had it, say, before May of last year, I would, actually, here's a good thing. In May of last year, only less than 12 months ago, President Obama declared that he was in favor of marriage equality. And that's when everything started here in New Zealand, because we started pressuring the politicians on Twitter in particular. And they, within a day, they finally started saying, yes, the Labour leader, David Shearer, said, yes, I support marriage equality. And all the other MPs started saying they did too. With a few days after that, Louisa Wall said she was going to introduce a marriage equality bill. She did by the end of the month. And in August, it was drawn from the ballot, and then everything went from there. So in less than a year, we've gone from no discussion of it and saying it's not going to happen to having marriage equality. So that's how quickly things change. And at the time that all of this business was going on with the pressuring, David Shearer in particular and others, I said at the time that I thought it was going to take a change of government before we would have marriage equality, and that would mean sometime after 2014. Well, it just goes to show you how wrong even I can be about these sorts of things. I thought it was going to be easily 2.5 years away at that point, when in fact it was less than 12 months. It was about 11 months from start to finish. And so, you know, that's a pretty significant quickening of the pace. And we see that in the U.S. as well, with states moving faster towards adopting marriage equality, and other countries are as well. So, you know, this is an idea whose time has come, and this is something that will happen sooner rather than later in most developed countries. I should add, too, that I did an extensive blog post about sort of wrapping up the reasons why our side won. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. But it was a fascinating experience watching all of this unfold. And I only played a teeny, 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 tiny little part. All I did was sort of debunk the other side and offer rational counterarguments to the irrationality of the radical right. But, and I doubt that more than a few hundred people ever saw the things that I said. Although having said that, some of those posts were among the most popular posts read by real people. So I don't know, maybe it did change a mind or two here and there. I don't know, but it certainly didn't hurt. So yes, we're all very happy about that. But then of course that leads to an almost inevitable question about what are we going to do, Nigel and I? And the short answer is I have no idea. And part of the reason is because I have concerns. I'm a dual national, a citizen of the U.S. and New Zealand. And I have concerns about what happens once the Defense of Marriage Act is struck down or overturned or repealed, whichever happens first. And I'm betting on being struck down by the Supreme Court. But what happens then? Because if we're legally married here and then all of a sudden the U.S. can recognize the marriage, does that have tax implications? Does it have other implications? I just don't know. The only thing I do know that would mean, if we were legally married, is that then I could sponsor Nigel for immigration to the U.S. Not that we would at this stage of our lives, because, you know, that time is well and truly past, I think. But it would be an option for the first time ever, for the first time in the roughly 18 years we've been together, that would be the first time it would be possible for us to legally live in the USA. Now, as I say, that's not going to be happening, but it could if we wanted to, and that would be one positive benefit among others. So at this stage, the short answer is I don't know. It's certainly not ruled out, but until we find out a few more details about what would happen if we did, we're just going to hold off for a while, because as it is right now, even if DOMA is struck down or repealed, we would, in the eyes of U.S. law, be strangers because we're in a civil union, which isn't recognized by the U.S. for any purpose whatsoever. So even if DOMA were struck down, that wouldn't change. So we'll see. But I'm sure you'll hear about it first. Well, maybe second. So I don't know. That's what's coming up. So it's been a very exciting couple of weeks here, actually, in the final week leading up to the vote. It was getting all very exciting. And there were times I was really tempted to try to hit our right-wing opponents harder. And then I realized that in the final week, really, of the campaign, they were being remarkably quiet. They just weren't saying or doing anything, at least not in the social media sphere. Maybe they were privately. They started switching away from trying to convince MPs to vote against it, to trying to persuade voters to sign this pledge saying that they would vote against any MP who voted for marriage equality. I think that was a recruitment tool more than anything, because they only have 25,000 people who actually signed the pledge so far. And this was in the height of the campaign they started this. And for some perspective, there's over 3 million eligible voters in New Zealand, something like 3.3 million eligible voters. So 25,000 is nothing. It's not even enough to get anybody elected to anything. So except maybe a small local council somewhere. But so it's the whole thing, the whole end of the campaign for them was kind of weird, I thought, and kind of almost anticlimactic. I think they must have known they were losing and they didn't want to put any more emphasis or spend any more resources on something they couldn't win. But, you know, that's as it is. But it is funny because after the thing was all over in the days after, they were talking about what they could do to repeal it. The Conservative Party wants referenda, as I mentioned, and binding referenda. And supposedly Winston Peters is pledged to do that as well. So they think maybe they could, if they get into government, they could insist that there be a binding referendum on it, or maybe they could repeal it. Well, no, it doesn't work that way, because in New Zealand, once an issue is over, it's over. People don't go back and revisit it. The New Zealand Parliament passed a bill outlawing child abuse, essentially. It was a law that allowed almost any a parent to use almost any physical force on a child as long as they said it was reasonable. They just had to say it was. It didn't actually have to be reasonable. And so there were some horrific stories that resulted from that legal defense. And so that was repealed. Parents can still spank their kids if they want, but it can't be enough to cause physical harm to the child. And the right wing didn't like that, including this same guy who's been actually both of these right wing guys. And so they got that referendum on the ballot, and I talked about that at the time. Well, they still haven't gotten over that, and they're still angry that prostitution was decriminalized. And basically, they're just angry, full stop. But anyway, so the other day they were talking about how they were going to repeal the law. And so one of my smart-ass tweets, I said, yeah, just like they repealed prostitution reform and the anti-smacking law. So they don't have a good track record of being able to do it. And New Zealanders are far too practical to keep relitigating the same issues over and over and over again. This is over. And although they may try to make an issue out of it come the elections next year, it ain't going to fly for them. And so, you know, they're going to have to find some issue that people actually care about, and they just haven't been able to do that yet, clearly. So that's all of the excitement that's been going on here in New Zealand, which has been a pretty big deal, I have to say. And it also came as a lovely antidote after the tragedy in Boston and also in Texas, tragedies. And so it was kind of a nice way to round out that week. And last week, Joe My God, which is one of the bloggers I read the most, daily, he posted the video clip of the end of the vote on the marriage bill as a nice way to end the week because it had been such a bad week, and which I thought was a nice touch. I really did, because he'd already posted it once. But the funny thing about that is I've seen the clip referred to in sites all over the internet, and they all say the same thing about how wonderful it is, and, oh, wouldn't it be nice if our legislature, whatever country they're in, could do the same thing, and, oh, that'd be so nice. Well, I can promise you that the New Zealand Parliament is not normally like that. because if you watch the video, in addition to singing Pukarikariana, which is a love song, which is also sometimes called New Zealand's second national anthem because everybody knows it, although we actually already have two national anthems, as you might recall. They don't normally have waiata at the end of a bill's passage into law, and they don't normally necessarily cross the floor to hug each other. Because normally when a bill becomes law, it's a government bill, and the government votes as a bloc. The opposition almost always votes, in fact, it always does, votes as a bloc against it, and the two sides are diametrically opposed. So there's no, you know, cross-aisle collegiality like we saw in that. It's only on a member's bill where there's a conscience vote. And those are two unusual things to happen. First of all, for a member's vote, a member's bill to get that far along, and for it to be a conscience vote. So what is depicted in that video is a really pretty rare kind of occurrence. Nice as it was, and it was a lovely moment, it still brings a tear to my eye when I watch it. But it's not typical. Sad to say, it is not typical. But part of my job is to tell you the reality of life in New Zealand and not just the postcard pretty pictures. Now, of course, the episode that was supposed to be episode 298 was originally supposed to be the interview that I told you about last time. However, rescuing the audio from that has proven to be much more difficult than I anticipated. So I've decided that instead I'm just going to take my time and get it right. And no matter how long it takes, it's not particularly time sensitive. So I don't think that really matters. And then the whole Pride 48 thing came up, and that's the next thing that this episode was going to be about. And then marriage equality happened, and it trumped both of them. So what I am doing is I'm going to pre-record another episode about basically following on and finishing up with that Pride 48 thing, which will be the next episode, probably in a couple of days you'll get that. And then I'll have the interview one when I can get to it, probably in the early 300s episodes, because this is 298. And that's the plan. That's what I'm planning on doing. The next one, episode 299, which will be about the revisiting the Pride 48 thing, because I did get a lot of lovely comments, will not be recorded when I release it, if that makes any sense, because I usually record the day I release. That one I'm recording in advance, so there won't be any news updates or anything like that. That'll have to wait till next week. So that is all I'm going to talk about today, because it's such a wonderful thing to talk about. And I wanted to tell you about what it was like and give you some of my impressions about the whole event, the whole series of events, and a little bit more information about the political process behind it and some of the things you wouldn't read about probably in the news. And of course, on my blog, I've blogged extensively about all of this and topics related and distantly related even. So you may want to check out that. There's a tag that you can read called NZ Marriage Equality, I think it is. Yes, NZ Marriage Equality. And so you can, you know, check out everything I've written and tagged with that if you are so interested. But that is it for today. Now, immediately after this, I am going to play the full audio from that clip so you can hear it. You can, as I said, go to my blog and watch it. I'll put a link in the show notes on the podcast site. And then there's nothing else after that but the normal closing outro. And that's it. So thanks for listening. I will be back next week. I will be back with a totally new episode next week, and I will have another one that's pre-recorded at the end of this week. If that makes any sense. I hope it does, because I'm not quite following that in my own head. But that's it for today. From New Zealand, the 13th country in the world to pass marriage equality and the first in the Asia Pacific region. Bye.
Order. Members and Bagheri, can I just ask that you refrain from any comment? There will be a waiata after the clerk has announced the third reading, but I just ask so that we can get the procedures of the House completed. Members, the ayes are 77, the noes are 44. the doors. Unlock the doors.
Marriage, definition of marriage, amendment bill, third reading.
Now, I understand...
You can comment on this or any episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com, where you can also leave a voice message. You can send me an audio message through Audioboo or Skype, where my username is Amrens, and you can email me, with or without a voice message, at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.